Okay, it's kind of embarrassing how bad I am at budgeting.
Let me see your charges.
Ugh, fine.
You spent over $600 on takeout last month.
I can't cook. You know this.
Yes, I have had your disgusting food, but you're literally paying for a meal subscription on top of that.
Whoa, wait. That can't be right.
Look, just get Rocket Money. It shows you all of your expenses in one place and even tracks your subscriptions. And if there's a subscription you don't want, which for you, there are a lot you don't need, you can just cancel right in the app with a few taps.
So you mean I don't have to call anyone to cancel?
Nope. No hold times or anything. And they'll even try to get you a refund on some of the months of wasted money, which is a lot of money for you.
Okay.
And if you thought I was done, I'm not. The app can also help you make a budget that works for your income. Anytime you get close to your spending limits, it alerts you, so you know exactly where your money is going at all times.
All right, I'm in. What do I have to do?
Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple or Google Play stores.
This is Hotel Mars, Episode N, CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor with my colleague and co-host and friend David Livingston, Dr. Space of The Space Show. And we're having a wonderful memory lane stroll with Rob Godwin, the publisher of RCG Publishing, which has a number of wonderful stories about Apollo and early days of dreaming of landing on the moon and what comes next. Well, we're on the moon right now with Apollo 16. The landing site was chosen in what is called the Descartes site. Most significant to me in my memory is the Lunar Roving Vehicle, the LRV, or the Dune Buggy. What was it, Rob? How was it put together? What was the ambition of running around on the moon in that strange landscape?
It was built by Boeing, John, and it was designed to get them further afield than they would be able to go on foot. And it had, I think it had like a top speed on the moon of perhaps as much as 16 or 17 kilometers an hour. It was designed to go faster than that, but it was extremely light. They couldn't use pneumatic tires on the moon, so it had these piano wire wheels, which allowed it to have some suspension as they were going around. It was electrically powered, electric motors on two separate systems. It also had steering at the front and the back, but it was light enough that the two astronauts on the moon could actually pick it up bodily and move it around, which turned out to be a useful thing on Apollo 16, because when they first offloaded it from the lander, it turned out the rear steering wasn't working and they didn't know why, and they were quite concerned about that. So they loaded it up anyway because they knew they were going to go out. Once they got it loaded up, suddenly the rear steering started working and they thought, okay, fine. So off they went. And on one of their trips out in it, they were trying to go up a particularly steep hill, about a 20 degree angle, and the rear wheels stopped working again. And so it got dug in, and they were discussing it afterwards. What were they going to do if it got stuck? And they said, well, if both the front and back steering had failed, they would literally have driven it towards the lunar lander. And every time it went off course, they'd get out, pick it up, point it in the right direction again, and then get back in and keep going like that. And that was their plan for getting back. But fortunately, they didn't have to do that. The front steering saved the day and they got back.
A detail. I call it a dune buggy because that's what it looks like. There's no chassis. There's just a couple of guys sitting with looks to be a... What is that? Just like paper mache platform?
Well, it did have a chassis, but it was extremely light. I think the thing that was the most remarkable about it, John, was that it also carried a fully functional television studio, which could transmit a TV picture in color live 250,000 miles back to the Earth. And so everywhere they went with it, when they got to where they were going, they stopped, parked, and pointed that antenna, that dish that was on the front of it, at the Earth and switched on the camera, and bingo, you had live pictures from a car on the moon.
Wonderful. David?
Are you following how they're planning to evolve the 2024 or later version of the moon buggy from the original moon buggy? and what's happening there?
I have been following it a little bit, John. I can't say that I'm completely up to speed on it, but I mean, they've been talking about it for so many years now. I mean, what we're talking about is 50 years ago. And so replacement vehicles for the lunar surface have gone through such an evolution in the last 50 years. And indeed, before they went to the moon with Apollo, they had dozens and dozens of different concepts for what they called mobile laboratories. And some of these new designs that they're coming up with now are much more akin to that. And in fact, what it is a fully pressurized vehicle that they can drive from A to B without getting into their spacesuits. And in some cases, some of the designs have spacesuits that are actually built into the door. So once they get where they're going, they sort of like almost like a submarine hatch where they grab the handles and put their feet through first and into the suit. And the suit's actually attached to the door itself. So these new rovers are probably going to be pressurized, which is, you know, like comparing a little tiny sort of Ford Model T to you know, today's mobile home.
The tense moments for the original Apollo 11 was the landing, the final moments before settling down. And then always the question of the takeoff, of returning to the lunar, to the Apollo main spacecraft. Was there any tension in Apollo 16, any of those events?
There was actually, John, because what happened was after they had separated the lunar lander from the command service module, they had a problem with the engine on the command service module again, and they weren't sure whether they should proceed. And so the two spacecraft stayed in orbit a lot longer than they were supposed to do until they figured that, you know, they could sort of hack a fix to what needed to be done. And so when they finally fired the lunar descent engine and went for a landing, they were a lot later than they had expected to be. And so they'd used a lot more electrical power than they were expecting to use. And so when they landed, instead of just going straight outside and starting to do their moonwalk, they had to go to a sleep cycle because they were, you know, hours late. And so that threw off everything. It threw off the clocks that they had on board. They didn't know what time it was, which is incredibly critical if you're going to take off and get home on time with all the plans that were in place. And it also, of course, it threw off the television broadcasts back on the ground, which contributed in part, I think, to the audience not tuning in because everybody thought they were going to land and go out at certain time, and they didn't do it until, you know, eight, or it was actually 15 hours later that they went out for their first moonwalk.
David?
What was the range of the Apollo 16 moon buggy?
They were outside for about 20 hours total, David, and that was over three EVAs, which was, you know, a moonwalk basically. And they did 27 kilometers over those three EVAs. So that doesn't answer your question as to what its range actually was, but that's how much they used it, about the equivalent of about 5 kilometers in each direction over three different trips.
And the memory of Apollo 16 now, 50 years later, it achieved its goals, but you've mentioned all the glitches. What impresses me in your recounting, Rob, and also in reading through the Wikipedia, is how daring they were, what we know now and they didn't know then, and the digitalization of NASA and our ability to communicate, or even our understanding of the surface of the moon is profoundly different. They were voyaging into the unknown is my measure of reading what they did.
Yeah, absolutely. And the fact that the general public were already starting to tune out because of various different things that had happened with previous missions. And the Vietnam War was in full steam ahead and people were becoming less interested. Regardless of that, these guys flew almost a perfect mission, even with all these little glitches that were going on. They were doing an extraordinary amount of exploration in a really hazardous environment. And that anecdote I told you about the orange juice, I mean, at one point they were thinking they might have to sleep with their helmets on the moon because they were afraid if they took them off, they might not get them back on again. Those kinds of things, and the lunar dirt that they were absolutely covered in it, and that was getting into the seals of their gloves like grit, you know, like sandpaper. Those kinds of risks, I don't think anybody would even consider taking them today.
David, we have about a minute.
Do you think that the moon buggy was a huge advance in what they could do. And could it somehow have been used to keep on going past Apollo 17 now that they had something really different from before?
It's interesting, David. Somebody said that if they figured if they went up there and put batteries back in those rovers, they'd probably still work. I don't know if that's true, but it gave them a capability to do things that they certainly couldn't have done without it. One of the hazards of driving it, of course, was that when you were driving into the sun, they actually couldn't see if they were going into a crater or just over a very sloping rise. So they were taking enormous risks. And John Young said that he was not happy driving it above 6 or 7 kilometers into the sun, 6 or 7 kilometers per hour. Whereas down sun, he was a little bit more risky. And I think they got it up to 17 kilometers an hour at one point. It was a real hack, if you would use today's terminology.
1972, 50 years ago, April 1972, just like yesterday. David Livingston, Dr. Space, and we thank Rob Godwin, our guide, RCG Publishing. This is Hotel Mars. I'm John Batchelor.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.
Okay, it's kind of embarrassing how bad I am at budgeting.
Let me see your charges.
Ugh, fine.
You spent over $600 on takeout last month.
I can't cook. You know this.
Yes, I have had your disgusting food, but you're literally paying for a meal subscription on top of that.
Whoa, wait. That can't be right.
Look, just get Rocket Money. It shows you all of your expenses in one place and even tracks your subscriptions. And if there's a subscription you don't want, which for you, there are a lot you don't need, you can just cancel right in the app with a few taps.
So you mean I don't have to call anyone to cancel?
Nope. No hold times or anything. And they'll even try to get you a refund on some of the months of wasted money, which is a lot of money for you.
Okay.
And if you thought I was done, I'm not. The app can also help you make a budget that works for your income. Anytime you get close to your spending limits, it alerts you, so you know exactly where your money is going at all times.
All right, I'm in. What do I have to do?
Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple or Google Play stores.
Marriott Bonvoy is the official hotel partner of U.S. soccer. Join Marriott Bonvoy today to get closer to the game with exclusive perks, unforgettable experiences, and benefits that go beyond the pitch. Spring Hill Suites, part of Marriott Bonvoy, offers complimentary hot breakfast and spacious all-suite accommodations, perfect for the whole team, with room for up to 6 guests. Make your next getaway a win. Learn more at springhillsuites.marriott.com.